Hello and welcome to an episode of Coffee House Shots podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm now joined by our political editor, Jane Forsyth, and our assistant editor, Isabel Hardman, to discuss Theresa May's speech, which she's just given, about the shared society.
Well, it was her first domestic reform speech, given we didn't have a leadership contest. We don't know a lot about Theresa May still. And her first few months have naturally been dominated by discussion of Brexit, even though actually we don't know a great deal more about what Brexit means at the moment either. She was trying to set out her view of society, which involved a rebranding of the big society from David Cameron, which in itself was a rebranding of the Conservatives' view of society after Margaret Thatcher's "there's no such thing as society" comments. So I suppose it's a sort of big picture speech, but it would be nice to have been given a little bit more tangible picture of what the shared society, as Theresa May calls it, would really look like. She said she wanted to shift government from focusing purely on social mobility, so on the poorest in society, to the changing the agenda for those who are just managing, for those who feel that government doesn't do very much for them at all. But what does that actually mean? She then went on to talk about house building, which, to be fair to the previous government, they talked a lot about that and came up with what looked like quite similar solutions to the ones that we're expecting in the Housing Green Paper in the next few weeks. Similarly, we did have an industrial strategy under the last government, even though it wasn't always called that. So there's nothing particularly distinctive that May announced in her speech. The focus was on mental health. And again, there wasn't much different to what politicians in the coalition and in the last Tory-led government have said about it, particularly when actually the main problem is that there just isn't enough funding for the treatments that keep people in work and that help people be cured from these illnesses. And Theresa May didn't announce very much more money for mental health treatment at all. So there's not really a shift at all there.
James, was there anything you found striking in it?
I found a couple of things in it quite interesting. I mean, first of all, obviously the shared society. It's an attempt to further move herself away from the often slightly distorted Margaret Thatcher quote about there being no such thing as society. She is trying to say that she wants an active government, not the kind of classic conservative view of a night watchman state, but she wants government to actively intervene to help people. I also think, as Isabel said, you can see her trying to talk about domestic policy now before Brexit becomes all-consuming when the Supreme Court case comes back. So I think we're going to get, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to get a speech on industrial strategy. She's trying to do these speeches now while people listen to them. But then I thought the other, perhaps the most interesting point was when she said, look, if we can't solve these problems, if we can't make people feel that government is on their side and their lives are getting better, they're going to turn to extremist political parties. She pointed at Europe and she said, look, you've got the far left and the hard right on the move because politicians aren't listening to what people are saying about immigration, economy and their standard of living. And I think this is a kind of big feature of Mayism, which is, you know, we've got to make it work this time, otherwise people are going to turn away from centre ground politics.
I suppose it's interesting because with Brexit, people were voting against too much political intervention, but it sounds like she's moving more towards a slightly more involved government. Do you think people will appreciate that?
Yeah, that's an interesting reading of it. I think she was pitching her speech at those who feel resentful of government in some way, and perhaps she feels that sentiment was behind the Brexit vote as well, that people feel that politicians don't really understand their lives, that when they are warning them about things, they don't really understand what the consequences of Brexit would be for a normal voter, for instance. She painted a very gloomy picture of what life in Britain is like today in the same way as she did when she first became Prime Minister, when she was standing in Downing Street. And some people might say that's too downbeat, but actually I suspect it's her trying again to draw a contrast between the way that David Cameron and George Osborne often ended up talking, which was quite upbeat, trying to encourage people to look for the sunlit uplands. And maybe she felt that they appeared too complacent and out of touch, to coin a phrase from Ed Miliband, who she often actually resembles in some of the themes that she picks up in her speeches.
James, do you think that's wise to paint such a gloomy picture as we are about to go into these Brexit negotiations?
I think you can paint a gloomy picture for a short period of time. She's been Prime Minister for 6 months. And at this point, she can say, look, I feel your pain. I understand the problems facing the country. I think if we were doing this podcast a year from now, people would begin to say, well, what have you done about it? So I think at the moment she can do that. I think there's also something else going on, which is because she didn't back Brexit, she feels the need to kind of go a very long way in trying to say that she understands why people voted for it. She always does this thing about the Brexit vote wasn't just about the EU, it's about more than that, and I understand your frustration with the way the country's governed. I mean, that is part of her trying to say, look, I might not have been for Brexit, but I get why people were for it. I think the big question is whether she can actually begin to make a difference for these people's lives. When Fraser and I interviewed her for the Christmas issue of the magazine, she was very frustrated with the way that Whitehall were talking about just about managings and saying, oh, well, they must be earning between 17 and 21,000 a year, so let's look at a series of kind of tax changes that might help them out. She thinks it's about something kind of bigger than that, but we've actually got to see what the policy is. What is she actually going to offer these people? Isabel says that's the ultimate test of this analysis.
And just on Brexit, obviously yesterday Theresa May gave an interview to Sophie Ridge on Sky. Did we get more of a sense of what Brexit's going to look like?
I don't think she said anything that she hadn't said before, but she said it all at the same time, if you see what I mean. So people, I think, have reacted to that. It is, to my mind, when she says we're not going to try and keep hold of membership, we want a trade deal with the EU, and that we prioritise, that the UK will prioritise control of immigration, control of its own borders. I think it's quite clear from that, but it's highly unlikely the UK stays in the single market. I mean, the only reason she won't say that outright is who knows whether she's going to make some kind of moon on a stick style initial demand to be able to do anything you want on immigration and stay inside the single market, knowing that that's a kind of card she's going to have to chuck out in the negotiation.
And just finally, in the interview, she was pushed about Trump's comments. What did you make of her response to that?
I thought the telling thing was that when she was confronted with the whole Trump pussy quote, and she said, oh, obviously that's unacceptable. But then very quickly she moved to say, well, he said it's unacceptable too. Which I think shows you both the kind of weird double set of eggshells that British members of British government are on when talking about Trump, which is they can't sound like they're sanctioning some of the things that he said, but they also want to avoid offending someone who is notoriously thin-skinned. You know, this is a president-elect of the United States. He's, 11 days before he becomes president? And he's taking a call from a reporter after 11 o'clock at night to discuss some disobliging comments an actress made about him at an awards ceremony. I mean, this is someone who doesn't take criticism very well or very easily, and I think Theresa May was probably quite aware as she was answering that question that he had just tweeted that she was going to be a visitor to Washington in the spring, and she probably was thinking, oh my word, let's not say anything here that causes another tweet to come saying invitation cancelled.
Yeah, she's not a prime minister like David Cameron who appears to like to intervene in a way that will grab headlines, if that makes sense. So obviously talking about Donald Trump is a little bit different to Gordon Brown talking about Susan Boyle, but I suspect we won't get that sort of popular running commentary from her, whether it be on Trump or celebrities or footballers, in the way that we have from previous prime ministers.
She is right about the fact that the prime ministerial intervention was devalued by the frequency with which they were made. I remember, what was it, early on in the Blair years, he got involved in his views on a miscarriage of justice on Coronation Street, you know. I did think that during the Brexit campaign, you realise how devalued it had been that when Cameron stepped out and with days to go, he said, look, when I walk through that door, I need EU membership to help me deal with the various problems I have. That by the evening news that night, that wasn't even the lead item. We've got so used to prime ministers coming out and saying things that they'd lost their lustre. In a way, she, by doing less, it is actually does ensure that the media stop and pay attention when she does do stuff.
Thank you, James and Isabel. And just a quick reminder of our subscription offer. You can get 12 issues for £12 by going to spectator.co.uk/12.